Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Proverbs chapter 2, the title of which I am going to say is The Moral Benefits of Wisdom. Chapter 1 was about wisdom in general. Now we're going to talk about the benefits of wisdom. The first 15 verses of Proverbs 2 talk about the benefits of wisdom in general, and then at the end, there's a particular type of wisdom the proverb writer, i.e. Solomon, is going to talk about, and that's the wisdom of staying away from loose women. So we start now. I'm going to read verses 1 through 15. My son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, and then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice, and he preserves the way of his godly ones. Then you will discern righteousness and justice and equity in every good course. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will guard you. Understanding will watch over you, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who delight in doing evil and rejoice in the perversity of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. Now, these first 15 verses are quite obvious. They don't need a lot of exposition. They basically say, be wise, be smart, be moral, and good things will happen to you. Solomon does say you've got to search for his hidden treasures. Treasures are hidden. They're not lying on the ground where you can just go pick them up. So wisdom is not easy to find. You've got to work for it. You've got to search for it. You've got to cry out for it, cry out to God, to lift your voice for understanding. You've got to attend your ear to wisdom. So it's not automatic. But if you do that, in verse 5, you will discern the fear of the Lord. Of course, that fear is not servile fear, but it is reverence. You will discern how to be reverential toward the Lord. And you will discover the knowledge of God. And of course, that's not just head knowledge. That's personal knowledge, I believe. Relationship knowledge, as in Adam knew Eve. For the Lord gives wisdom. That would be natural wisdom as well as spiritual wisdom, in my opinion. You need natural wisdom to get through life, who to marry, what job to take, and so forth, how to raise your kids. God is a shield to those who walk in integrity. Notice that when you behave morally, i.e. walk in integrity, then you get protection from God. There is a connection. You do stupid things and don't walk in integrity, the protection might disappear. For example, if you snort cocaine, what kind of protection are you going to get from God? Probably none. Verse 8, guarding the paths of justice, God does that. He preserves the way of his godly ones. He preserves your way. He gets you through life. Then you will discern, verse 9, righteousness and justice and equity in every good course, which way you should walk. Wisdom will enter your heart, verse 10, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Now, a lot of times people will make a distinction between wisdom and knowledge. Knowledge is a factual thing. You know something that's true, but that doesn't mean you know how to act on it. Wisdom tells you you know how to act on it. I don't know if we can make such a fine distinction here. Wisdom and knowledge are in parallel. Perhaps so. Discretion will guard you, just another word for wisdom. Understanding will watch over you, another word for wisdom. To deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things. So this is the first benefit, is you're protected from evil, evil people. You're protected from those who delight in doing evil and rejoice in the perversity of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. Now, Solomon gave all this advice to his son. He says in verse 1, my son, if you will receive my words, Solomon's words, and treasure Solomon's commandments, listen to your old man, son. Who's the son? Well, some people speculate it's Rehoboam. Rehoboam, of course, was Solomon's successor as the ruler of Israel, or the ruler of Judah, I should say, the southern two tribes. Of course, Rehoboam was such a nitwit, such a moron, that he raised taxes on the northern 10 tribes when he asked for advice. His old advisors, Solomon's advisors, said, go easy with these guys. And his young advisor says, no, screw them to the wall. And so Rehoboam tried to, and they said, okay, we're taking our marbles and we're playing elsewhere. And they split the kingdom up. And the kingdom was split until the northern 10 tribes got wiped out by Assyria in 722, and the southern 2 tribes got wiped out by Babylon in 586 BC. So Solomon said all this wisdom would lead to all kinds of integrity and protection, but there was a condition attached. My son, if you will receive my words And if he was talking to Rehoboam, Rehoboam did not receive his words. It could have been another son of Solomon. It could be just, some people have speculated, the son of personified wisdom, as in the last chapter, wisdom stands in the streets calling out. And of course, there's about 11 dozen different interpretations of who that wisdom is, but just assume it's just a personified wisdom, a poetic figure. And this son could be the son of that poetic figure, wisdom. I don't think so. It doesn't sound like it. My son, it sounds like a true son of Solomon. At any rate, Solomon is now continuing to talk to his son in verses 16 through 22, and we'll finish this proverb. He's going to warn his son against that temptation which always wrecks young men. Evil women, loose women. Verses 16 through 22 reads like this. Solomon begins, "To deliver you from the strange woman." In other words, all that wisdom he's mentioned earlier, "My son, if you receive my words, you will get wisdom to deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words, that leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her tracks lead to the dead. None who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land, and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted from it." Now, verse 16 in the NASB says that this wisdom will deliver you from the strange woman. The Holman Christian Study Bible says from the forbidden woman. God's Word translation says from the adulterous woman. So the strange woman is an adulterous woman. And the parallel tells you that, because at the end of verse 16, Solomon says the wisdom will deliver you from the adulteress who flatters with her words. Now notice adulteresses, they flatter. "Oh, you're so handsome, you're so strong." That's what men need. See, they need respect. Maybe he's not getting it at home. Maybe his wife's nagging him. Who knows? And all of a sudden, this honeypot comes around and she starts flattering the husband, saying what a hunk he is. And so this is what Solomon is telling his son. Beware of this. Don't listen to her flattery. She is evil and she has ulterior motives when she says all these nice things about you. There is some more information in Proverbs about the adulterous woman. Proverbs 9 verses 13 through 18 says this. The woman folly is rowdy. Folly is capital F. She's got a name. So this is another personified woman. Folly, she's rowdy. This is Holman Christian Study Bible translation. She is gullible and knows nothing. She sits by the doorway of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling to those who pass by, who go straight ahead on their paths. Whoever is inexperienced in her hair. To the one who lacks sense, she says, stolen water is sweet and bread eaten secretly is tasty. There is something true about that. When you do something that you're not supposed to be doing, it sort of gives a rush to you. Like when you're shoplifting something or blowing up a mailbox or something. Yeah, it's fun. Going into an adulterous woman, there's nobody saying that it ain't fun. Verse 18, but he, the inexperienced one who lacks sense, doesn't know that the departed spirits are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. So you go into a woman's house, you might as well be going into hell itself, into the afterlife, where the departed spirits are. You might as well be going into a grave, because that's what an adulteress will get you, is death. In verse 16, the strange woman, this adulteress, is called in the Holman Christian Study Bible note, the foreign woman. I don't know why. Perhaps a lot of proselytes came into Israel, and a lot of them were adulteresses. I don't know. But at any rate, in verse 17, this adulteress leads the companion of her youth. God's Word translation has her husband, puts it in brackets because it's not in the original text. But that's what it means. The companion of her youth means her husband. She leaves him. She forgets the covenant of her God. This, of course, is the marriage covenant. God's Word translates that as marriage vows. She leaves her marriage vows. Now, a marriage is more than a contract. It's a holy covenant. You recall the difference between a contract and a covenant. A contract merely says, if you'll do this, I'll give you this. But a covenant says, if I don't do what I promise you, may you come kill me. Much more serious. There's also some ceremony involved, some rituals, covenant meals, salt, and so forth. So a marriage covenant is a very serious contract. It is a contract, but it's more than a contract. And when a woman forgets her marriage vow, she's forgetting the covenant of her God. Notice that it's of her God. It's not just a covenant with the husband. It's not just this covenant that she's broken. She's also broken her covenant with God. Because when you vow to stay with somebody for the rest of their life as their spouse, you are making a covenant not only to your spouse, you're making a covenant to God that you're going to do that. As John Gill says, not only because God is the author and institutor of marriage and has directed and enjoined persons to enter into such a contract with one another, but because he is present at it and is a witness of such an engagement, is appealed unto in it, which, as it adds to the solemnity of it, makes the violation of it the more criminal. There is another famous Old Testament passage about marriage covenants. Malachi 2:14, yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been a witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. This is when the husband treats the wife wrongly. We've been talking about adulteresses. Well, this is here talking about divorce. A man puts away his wife unjustly. He's dealt treacherously with her, even though she's been his companion and wife by covenant. Covenant with the wife and covenant before God. In verse 18, Solomon says, the adulteress's house sinks down to death and her tracks lead to the dead. In other words, you follow the path of the adulteress, you're heading right to the grave, son. John Gill says about this walking to death in the house of the adulteress, the adulterer is, quote, liable to lose and do lose their name, character, and reputation. Or at least the young man who's going into the adulteress is liable to lose. And they do lose their name, character, and reputation, which is a death upon them, and bring diseases upon their bodies, which issue in corporal death, or are in danger of dying by the hand of the injured husband or the civil magistrate, and also are exposed unto eternal death. I remember there was a story of a church right down the street from me. A woman committed adultery on her husband. The guy shows up with a gun, starts firing away, aiming at the, I don't think he was aiming at his wife. I think he was aiming at the guy who was committing adultery with her. Adultery is serious business, folks. Real serious. John Gill mentions that adultery brings diseases upon the adulteress's bodies or the adulterer's bodies. That reminds me, I did a PowerPoint presentation in China to about 100 Chinese college students about trial marriage. That's a big deal in China now. And of course, everybody believes in that because we got to test everybody out. And I did a bunch of research, showed what a disaster trial marriages are, how they don't work, how they bring all kind of grief. But the best part of that presentation is when I put pictures of people who were afflicted with sexually transmitted diseases, the warts and the boils and the horrible looking disfigurements. And I looked at their faces and they were blanched, those Chinese faces, white as mine. And they and I did a poll before that. I said, how many of you think trial marriage is okay? And a majority of them said yes. I did a poll afterwards. Of those 100 students, there was about 2 that thought it was okay. And I really believe it was the picture of the diseases that really stopped them. Now in verse 19, Solomon says, none who go into this adulteress ever return again. God's word translates that as, none who have sex with her come back, nor do they ever reach the paths of life. They die. You know, it's really funny to me how sin always seems good at first. I've never done drugs, but I understand when you take that first snort of cocaine, whoo, it feels good. LSD, whatever. Take a drag on a marijuana cigarette. Oh, I feel so relaxed. Everything feels good until the next morning. And I guess the adultery will feel good too. Till the next morning. So Solomon tells his son, verse 20, so you will walk in the way of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. In other words, away from the paths that lead down to death in the adulteress's house, you take a righteous path away from there. Verse 21, for the upright will live in the land and the blameless remain on it, live as opposed to dying. Adultery was so bad that some of the ancients considered it the unpardonable sin. It's very difficult to escape from the sin of adultery, Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 7:26, and I discovered more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. In verse 22, Solomon says, but the wicked will be cut off from the land. Now, the wicked there probably includes not only the adulteress, but the naive simpleton son, young man who goes into the adulteress. They'll be cut off from the land. They will either be expelled by the magistrate, but most probably cut off means to be killed. They will die. I mean, he's been talking about death. The adulteress's tracks lead to the dead. None who go to her will return again, nor do they reach the paths of life, death, death, death. So when he says in verse 22, the wicked will be cut off, I don't think he means judicially cut off. I think he means physically cut off. He's killed. Now I want to finish this audio by telling you a story of one time I was approached by one of these women. Well, actually, when I was in China, it seems like half the time I got a massage, I was approached by some of these women. But that wasn't as bad as this time I'm going to tell you about. My father took me to a funeral. My father's an atheist. He had Jaguars because, you know, that's what atheists do. They drive Jaguars. So we drove to this funeral in his Jaguar, and we were all dressed up in our monkey suits, our funeral suits. And it was one of his relatives, and I didn't know her, and it was in a city that I'd never been to before. I didn't know any of the deceased relatives. It turns out that the deceased had a will that had three witnesses. It required three witnesses back then in South Carolina. And I was one of the witnesses. And when somebody dies, you got to take the will down to the probate court and get it probated. Well, I was one of the witnesses, and you need two witnesses to do this. And one of the other relatives of the deceased was another relative. So the people in charge there at the house said, "You two go down to the courthouse." Well, this other witness was a relative, and she was dressed up in her funeral finery. And, of course, she was dolled up, and she was young, about 30 or so, and she's very pretty. But there was nothing amiss that I knew about, and I got into the car. And it turns out this woman had just been divorced, and she was poor, hurting for funds. And all of a sudden, that woman with adulterous eyes started eyeing either me or the Jaguar. I'm not sure which, but I'm sure she liked that Jaguar. And she started talking about that Jaguar, and I started thinking, this woman is acting suspicious to me. And then she says she wanted to hear that Jaguar run. So she reaches her left leg over the gearbox, sticks it on the accelerator, which, of course, that's where my leg was on the accelerator, my foot was. And she starts revving up that accelerator with her leg right next to mine. And I'm thinking, this woman, if I'd have known this song, this proverb, I would have started reciting it to myself, because that woman was up to no good. She had that Jaguar's motor racing, and she was trying to get mine racing. And to be honest with you, she was getting ready to start. But, you know, I was a Christian guy, and I said, no, I am not going to be attracted by this kind of stuff. That's the last time I ever saw her. But that woman was walking on the way to death. I guarantee you she was an adulteress. And adulteresses, oh, they look good with all their finery and all their flattering words, but they will screw you in the end, and you will ruin your life. So the advice here that Solomon is given in modern English is to keep your pants zipped up. Not only the men, but the women. If you do that, your life will go so much better. And with those words of wisdom, we are now finished Solomon's chapter 2 of Proverbs. We'll go to his chapter 3 next in our next audio, which I will call Trust in the Lord with All Your Heart. I hope you stay tuned for that one, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.